Chapter 12. Suspicious Deaths. 18 years before Oliver Stone produced his film about the Kennedy assassination, JFK, screenwriter Dalton Trumbo collaborated with Mark Lane on the feature film Executive Action. The low-budget documentary-style film, told from the conspirator's point of view, was notable for one thing. At the end, it showed photos of 18 witnesses who had died within 3 years of the assassination, all but two of unnatural causes. A voiceover noted that an actuary hired by the London Sunday Times calculated the odds that all these people connected to the assassination would die within that period to be 1,000 trillion to one. That turned out to be quite an overstatement. The 18 witnesses' deaths were taken from a universe of a handful of material witnesses when they should have been measured against the population of the entire U.S. The actual odds were 1 and 1.75. The Times retracted the story and apologized, blaming it on careless journalism. Critics chuckled that it was typical of the hyperbole surrounding JFK conspiracy theories. While that may be true, there are a number of deaths of people with a connection to the case that appear at first glance at least suspicious and convenient. Take the case of David Ferry, the New Orleans character connected to Carlos Marcello and Guy Bannister. Ferry's name surfaced when Jack Martin, an associate of Bannister's, began telling reporters and police that Ferry knew Oswald and might have been involved in the crime. Martin was the source of the story that Ferry would be the getaway pilot for the assassins and had driven to Houston before the mission was aborted. While the FBI reportedly did not find Martin's information reliable, New Orleans District Attorney Jim Garrison quietly began looking into it in 1966. He and his investigators began questioning Ferry about his activities and an alleged connection to the assassination. In mid-February 1967, the New Orleans State's Item broke the story of Garrison's investigation of the Kennedy assassination. According to a Garrison investigator, Ferry called later that day, outraged by the disclosure and shouting, "I am a dead man." A few days later, on February 22nd, he was. Ferry's lifeless body was found in his apartment, and the coroner ruled he had died of a brain aneurysm. Strangely enough, there were two undated letters that appeared to be suicide notes in a pile of papers on his desk. I suppose it could just be a weird coincidence that the night Ferry penned two suicide notes, he died of natural causes, Garrison said. On the night after Jack Ruby gunned down Lee Oswald, Ruby's attorney, Tom Howard, arranged to have two reporters interview Ruby's roommate, George Senator, and have a look around Ruby's apartment. Howard met Jim Cote of the Dallas Times-Herald and Bill Hunter of the Long Beach Press-Telegram at Ruby's apartment the evening of November 24, 1963. It's not known what the two reporters learned, if anything. Their stories contain no earth-shattering revelations. But on April 21, 1964, Hunter was shot to death by an on-duty police officer in the press room of the Long Beach police station. The officer claimed it was an accident, but there were no witnesses. On September 21, 1964, Cote died when someone broke into his Dallas apartment and killed him with a karate chop to the neck. As for Howard, the 48-year-old attorney, died of a heart attack in March 1965. Dorothy Kilgallen was a columnist for the New York Journal-American and a regular panelist on the hit TV program What's My Line. She had been interested in the Kennedy assassination from the start and made no secret of her belief that the president was killed as the result of a conspiracy. After a private 8-minute interview with Jack Ruby, Kilgallen reportedly told acquaintances she would soon have enough information to reveal who was behind the Kennedy assassination. On November 8, 1965, Kilgallen was found dead in her New York apartment. The cause of death was listed as heart failure, brought on by a cocktail of alcohol and barbiturates. Kilgallen's friend and personal hairdresser, Mark Sinclair, found her body and concluded immediately that she had been murdered. His reasons? She was found in a bedroom she had not used in years. She was wearing false eyelashes. She always took off her eyelashes before going to bed. She was found sitting up with a book, The Honey Badger. Sinclair claims she had finished the book weeks before, and her reading glasses, she had bad eyesight, were in another room. The notes and drafts of the chapter she had been writing about her interview with Ruby were never found. She reportedly had given a copy to her best friend, Florence Smith. However, Smith died 2 days later. The draft has never surfaced. Lee Bowers was in a very strategic position to view the assassination of President Kennedy. Bowers worked for Union Terminal Company and on November 22, 1963, was stationed in an observatory tower in the rail yard behind the picket fence and overlooking Dealey Plaza. Bowers is the only witness to place two men behind the picket fence as the shooting began. In a filmed interview with Mark Lane in 1966, Bowers said he believed something out of the ordinary occurred in the vicinity where the two men were standing. He spoke cryptically of a flash of light or smoke in the vicinity where the two men were standing. On August 9, 1966, Lee Bowers was driving to Midlothian, Texas, when his car swerved into a concrete abutment and he died 4 hours later. According to some accounts, Bowers told ambulance personnel who responded at the scene that he thought the coffee he had purchased minutes earlier at a truck stop had been drugged. Hank Killam was an ordinary house painter before November 22, 1963. His wife worked for Jack Ruby. He was an acquaintance of John Carter, one of Lee Oswald's fellow boarders at 1026 North Beckley Street. Killam was soon expressing the fear to friends that he knew too much about the assassination and was a marked man. He fled Dallas and returned to his native Pensacola, Florida. Still, he lived in fear, telling his brother Earl, "I am a dead man, but I am through running." On March 17, 1974, Killam was killed after crashing through a plate glass window with a glass shard cutting his jugular vein. His death was ruled a suicide, though one insurance investigator said he had never heard of a case of a person killing himself by jumping through a glass window. On November 20, 1963, 2 days before the assassination, the unconscious body of Rose Cherami was found on the shoulder of a road in Eunice, Louisiana. State police officers responding to the scene say she told them Cuban gangsters had thrown her from a car. She then said the two men were involved in a plot to kill President Kennedy in Dallas. She is said to have repeated the same story to doctors and nurses who treated her in the emergency room. Since she appeared to be under the influence of drugs, no one believed her story. On September 4, 1965, Cherami was once again found on a roadway, this one near Big Sandy, Texas, and this time she was dead. A motorist said he didn't see her body in time and ran over her head, killing her instantly if she were not already dead. State police found no evidence of foul play, and the case was closed. The list of people who allegedly had some connection to the Kennedy case and met an untimely end is much longer, but research has shown that many of these people actually had no connection to the assassination or their deaths had known causes. Conspiracy theory debunkers take particular delight in exposing these overstatements and mischaracterizations. Still, it's hard to dismiss all of these deaths.